Hello and welcome to another Cake Wolf's Happy Hour, 31 days of Halloween, where we are covering the 72 episodes of the show Monsters, a horror anthology that ran from the late 80s to early 90s. As I said, 72 episodes in this monstrosity of a horror anthology. Lots of good episodes here, also lots of bad. Today we're covering three really bad ones. So yeah, you can be the judge of that too. You think I'm full of shit, just chime in. KingCakeWolf@gmail.com. Reach out to us to say whatever you will. Also, check us out on CakeWolf.com, where we make horror-themed cocktails and other stuffs. We made a horror-themed cocktail for this show, Monsters. We called it the Monsters Candy Critters. And also, if you want to know a little bit more about the show Monsters and its history, check out our first episode on October 1st. We are doing this every day, 2 to 3 episodes a day. Usually, it's just Cake Bitch and I. However, today, we've got Dustbrain with us.
Hey there.
And Cake Bitch as well.
Yes. Happy Friday the 13th.
Yep, that's right. Friday the 13th it is, my friends. And this is pretty exciting. This is the first Friday the 13th that happens in an October that's happened in 11 years. It's been 11 years.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I saw something online that said that this is the first Friday the 13th in October that has happened in the last 666 years, but that's false.
11 years. That sounds like
years.
A Facebook meme.
It does sound like one. It's actually 11 years. So yeah, today switching it up by adding in Dustbrain, and tomorrow you're going to be getting Mr. Darian Brock of the Padded Room podcast covering 2 episodes. He's going to be doing it all by his lonesome, so bear with him.
What a champ.
And pretty good guy helping us out, giving us a little bit of a breather here. I'm sure you're going to like his voice a lot more than mine. His is more sultry. Mine sounds kind of like a dying chicken, but we're going to have to pull through it anyways. So today we're doing this episode's called Love Hurts, and it aired October 29th of 1989. This is in Season 2, Episode 5. Our director here is Manny Coto. And are you guys familiar with Manny Coto?
No.
Nope. He looks like a child. Do you agree?
Yeah,
he's that got picture
a
there?
Baby face, yeah.
Nice little fresh baby face.
Yeah, chubby cheeks.
So he was the producer on Dexter, and he was the writer on Dr. Giggles. Dr. Giggles is a 1992 horror movie about a doctor that is a killer, and apparently he likes to giggle about it. Haven't seen this one, but it looks pretty bad. Right up my alley. And we have a writer here. Our writer is Edith Swenson. We have mentioned her.
Someone wrote this?
Yeah, yep. We have mentioned her before. She is the writer on Charmed.
Oh.
Are you guys appreciators of Charmed? She did a few episodes on that.
I said I never actually watched it.
No?
If I did, it was only just for the eye candy, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Well, that's something that it had going for it in spades, right?
Nolly hates Charmed.
Our actors here, we've got Olivia Brown, Henry Brown, Valentina Quinn, Fred Pinkard, and Ren Woods. Olivia Brown, she's done a couple other things. She was in Miami Vice as Detective Trudy Joplin. Excuse me. Throw Mama from the Train. She was Miss Gladstone. And Harry Brown, he was in Lethal Weapon 3, Lethal Weapon, and he played different parts in that, little tiny bit parts, plainclothes cop sort of thing. He's kind of all over the place, just doing tiny roles in the background. So nothing too heavy there. Valentina Quinn, she was mostly in foreign films. She was in a film called The Old Man and the Sea. And are you familiar with the story that's behind this one?
No.
No, neither of you?
I mean, I've heard it of it, but I don't know the story.
Yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, I remember being kind of sad.
Yeah, it's like super Old Sad Bastard. I think this is where Old Sad Bastard originated. This was something that you had to read a lot in school growing up, right?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's just about death.
Yeah.
Him dying.
That's exactly what it is. It's like an inner monologue of this dude that's dying. Ren Woods we've got here, and she is, she's done quite a bit of stuff all over the place. Again, small parts, nothing real heavy to take note of. Apparently she was in a movie called Church, and she played Sister D, so, yeah, we've got, quite the stellar cast here of people that I've never heard of, and, probably have seen in the backgrounds. And, well, this is their chance to shine and try to grow beyond small bit parts, but it's not a wonder why they continued down this role of shit slide, because, well, this episode's kind of poops. Anyway, we're going to start this one off with basically a dude that is played by Henry Brown, named Vance. He is at a motor vehicle bureau, and he's running the show here. And he's got some people coming in and some people going. He's pretty bored with his job, but
he works at the DMV.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Soulless kind of job there. Olivia Brown playing Jewel. Jewel is there with him, and she's flirting it up. She obviously wants his schlong. She wants it bad. She wants his schlong all night long. And he seems to want to give it to her. So that's pretty cool. Now, apparently the two of them are married, is from what I can see here, so they must have hit it off pretty hard from this show. And there are some sexy sex scenes in here that...
Oh, you mean they're married in real life?
Yep. The sexy sex scenes are there, but as always in the show Monsters, it's kind of just like showing you their faces while they're making their ugly O face and their feets without their shoes on, but usually still wearing socks. Just a lot of dry humping. So they're hitting on each other, and we find out that they want to have a little bit of adultery here. Vance is married, but Jewel doesn't really care. She still wants to jump those bones. And So there's a lot of nonsense where Jewel is going to a sort of pseudo witch doctor that isn't exactly practicing voodoo, but it seems like voodoo, but they call it what?
Well, no, they keep saying guma, that they'll do it for the guma.
The guma, like,
I swear that's what they're saying. Now, when I googled guma, it means a mistress in mafia language.
Oh, okay.
So that doesn't make any sense.
I thought they were saying Goomba, like in...
Oh, maybe they were saying Goomba.
Yeah, like in Mario, remember that?
It's Mario Dust cults. Brain?
Yeah, it's a Mario cult. They
eat mushrooms all day.
Do it for the Goomba.
I love the Super Mario's movie that has the Goombas in it, but they don't look like they do in the video game. Instead, they're just these like really burly bodies with tiny lizard heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... So, maybe that those are their gods in this episode. I don't know. Praying to the Goombas. Praying to the Goombas seems to be the thing that Jewel likes to do, so she's doing a lot of that. Casting spells on Vance's family to try and get them out of the way so Vance can put his penis inside of her. And this seems to work pretty well because eventually Vance's, I guess his like stepfather, who was kind of acting as a cock block, he gets sick, so he's a little bit out of the picture.
I thought it was his father-in-law.
Yeah, that works too. Whatever. So he's no longer able to be a cock block, and Vance gets his pee-pee wet all over Jewel. So that's cool. She gets what she wants, but apparently the stepfather was not, or the father-in-law was not sick enough because he catches them in the act. They were fucking in the DMV.
Which is always smart.
Yeah, sure, why not? He's right behind the counter. So father-in-law comes in, catches him in the act, and Vance promises that he's never going to see her again. This is when the woman is away, and he's going to keep being good to his wife. This pisses off Jewel. She goes and visits him because he has been ignoring her, and Vance is staying true to his word to Mr. Father-in-law and not seeing Jewel.
Well, and his pregnant wife.
Yeah, so his pregnant wife is there at the house, and Jewel shows up. Vance tells his pregnant wife to go and, you know, grab him a donut or something to stay away while he deals with Jewel. He doesn't want her to see Jewel. But, yeah, she does end up seeing Jewel, and Vance makes a big scene out of it by slapping her across the face and calling her a hussy and telling her to go and hit the road. This doesn't settle well with Jewel, so what Jewel does is she goes back to her pseudo-witch doctor and prays to the Goombas, and ends up getting his wife out of the picture by getting Vance out of the picture. What she does is she puts a spell to make Vance end up, like, going to sleep, and then his soul visits her and then fucks her, and then because the soul fucks her, then in life forever, he's going to be her love puppy, slave, whatever, puppet thing. So this is all, like, beyond me because I don't study Goombas, but apparently Goombas can make this sort of thing happen. So if you want a love spell, go and pray to some Goombas, and then, you know, you'll get some spirits coming into your bed at night and you can fuck the shit out of them. So yeah, that happens. They fuck. And yeah, Jewel seems pretty happy about all this, but what ends up happening is Vance, he is an organ donor, which was touched on earlier in this episode that I just kind of glazed by. And because of this, when Vance left his body and was fucking Jewel, he got his organs taken out because he's an organ donor. So when he comes to find Jewel, when he's like spirits back in his body, he's got fucking, like, stitches all over him. He's got fucking scissors just clamping his eyeballs shut, and his organs are
removed. His eyeballs,
yeah, his organs are just spilled out and they're like hanging there. And he says to her, "Hey, baby, I'm all yours now. And at least they left me my best organs. So let's start getting to use them because we're gonna have a lot of time together now that I'm your love puppet forever." And she gets all freaked out. She's like, "Oh no, I made a bad mistake. I shouldn't have prayed to the Goombas." But that's where our episode ends, so...
Well, you kind of glazed over the fact that her fellow witch doctor friend tries to talk her out of doing this because she knows it's bad news. And so she kills her friend with the... I can't remember what the spell is. Something about they can't breathing. They can't breathe.
Yeah.
They can't breathing. That's what she just quietly chants.
They basically take a match, put it under a mason jar, and pray to the Goombas. There's a lot that I glazed over because really it's not the most powerful episode, so I figure just hitting some of the major points on it is fine enough. Now, as far as this episode goes, would you say that there is strong acting here? Because I think the acting's pretty crap, and as well as the writing, I think the writing definitely suffers.
I can't tell if it was the writing that was that bad or if the actors were that bad, because it was just a really bad episode.
Yeah, not too hot. I didn't really care for it. So, with the monster, would you say that this is really a monster? And what would you rate this guy? Because I don't really find it to be too much of a monster. It's just
a reanimated corpse.
Yeah, I guess essentially it kind of is.
Or she could be the monster. Well, isn't because the monster the Goombas they're praying
to? Oh, yeah, the monster might be the Goombas that they're praying to. How about that?
Oh, they're just using the Goombas.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're going down a rabbit hole, I would say the people using the Goombas may be the real monsters.
Well, I'm going to give this monster a 1 because I'm kind of confused as to who it really is. And if it's just the reanimated dude, well, it looks kind of okay, but still, it's sort of lame.
Yeah, I'll give it a 2 only because I liked that you could see through his insides. He had like a giant hole in the middle of him for some reason.
Yeah.
So that was kind of gross.
So question here for you guys. If he did get his penis taken out, do you think he could still pleasure a woman with his organs, like his lower intestines?
Do you think they removed his tongue or no?
Well, he could talk.
Was he bleeding in? Because you need blood flow to get that.
Ah, that's true.
He might just be.
Yeah. Hopefully he's got some really long toes.
She might just be looking down on this guy with no eyes.
Yeah, not too sure there. So, in other media, you're gonna find something out there called Shadow Man. Now, this is an old comic book series from Valiant Comics that I really liked. And they reissued the Shadow Man comics for a modern audience in the mid-2000s, so not too old. Lots of fun stuff. It's basically taking a character and giving him voodoo powers and having him fight crime. Can't go wrong there. They also did video games of the Shadow Man comics, and I think they're pretty fun too. Nintendo 64, I think, was the first adaptation of Shadow Man, yeah. Right?
That's one of my favorite games, actually.
Yeah,
I fucking love that game.
Fun stuff. Wasn't there some kind of involvement with teddy bears in that, where like that's how you travel from the real world to this death world?
Yeah, because your character's, the main character's brother, little brother, it's his, that he's, I guess, searching for.
Right.
I don't know. That's his teddy bear.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so they act as sort of like a catalyst between worlds.
Yep.
That's a fun game, yeah. I mean, it's like an action platformer, and...
Now, did that... So the comics came first? Because I didn't know about the comics.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Played the game.
Well, I played the game first as a kid, and then I learned about the comics maybe like 2 years ago? Not too long ago. But they're good stuff. And they got some really sweet-ass voodoo monsters in there. And, I mean, the writers of Valiant Comics... They do a good job at giving you quality stuff. Not everyone has heard of them, but they are on par with some of the best Marvel and DC comics out there. But they have they have their own universe going. And they're talking about getting into a cinematic universe. So there's currently in development, there's a series of comics called Bloodshot that's being adapted into a movie, and there's talks about Shadow Man becoming a movie as well.
Hmm.
So,
isn't it kind of taboo to have voodoo, like, horror movie? Like, isn't that kind of like an exploitation? Because then it's an actual religion, you know?
Well, I mean, that's fine if they go that route, in my opinion. Because there really is no... Well, nothing is safe to horror or any kind of medium, but I think especially horror. And it's not like they're only targeting the voodoo practice.
Yeah, they malign
also
Catholics
targeting.
Too.
Yeah, they target Catholics. They target Jews. They target, you know, everything.
Yeah,
so I feel like it's fair grounds as long as they keep spreading it out, you know?
Yeah, sure.
So, would you change anything for this episode? I feel like the whole episode needs to be changed.
I feel like just get rid of it.
I think if you're going to do an episode on voodoo, you need to make it a little bit stronger than just this simple fucking love triangle thing. Because the whole love triangle thing and voodoo feels like it's super overdone. Something I liked about the new Chucky movie, Cult of Chucky, and it's something that I always wanted to see in the Chucky movies, is Chucky always... I always wanted to see him use voodoo more. Because he does it in the first movie by using a voodoo doll to fuck with somebody. And then that's about all they really utilize voodoo. But in the Cult of Chucky, Chucky's using voodoo in a couple other ways. And it's pretty cool to see him actually using that. Because... that's something that can set him apart from a lot of the other slasher icons if they keep going down this route of him using voodoo.
What? How many other doll slashes are there?
Well, actually quite a few. There's a movie called Dolls that was done by Empire Films, but that's got like these little elf monsters in doll outfits. There's Dolly Dearest, which was pretty shitty back in the 80s.
Well,
that was a made-for-TV one.
I don't think Chucky needs to compete against these movies.
Well, yeah, sure. I think the one that's going to compete with him the most is probably the Puppet Master puppets.
Annabelle?
Annabelle's kind of... more like
slasher.
She doesn't really... I didn't see the new one, but she's not like an animated doll. She has things that attach themselves to her So they're, like, using her as a conduit for their, like, doorway Fair into enough. Our world. The Trilogy of Terror doll, I love him. I think he's a good contender for Chucky, but they only had three of those Trilogy of Terror movies.
Well, so. That's what trilogy means?
Yeah, well, they were each a trilogy.
Oh, so there's nine of them.
Well, essentially. But, yeah, I don't think this one was scary. Is there a lesson in this one?
Don't play with Goombas.
Yeah, don't play with Goombas. I like that. We'll work with that.
And don't have a Goomba.
Episode rating, I'm going to give this one a one.
Yeah, me too. It was pretty bad.
Moving on to the next one.
Of course, this might have been the best one we watched of the three.
I don't think so. No. So the next one that we're covering is called The Farmer's Daughter. This aired November 5th of 1989. And this is episode 6 of season 2. This is a situation that I would find Jason, Mr. Dustbrain over here, I would find him getting involved in a situation just like this. I think this would be his demise. So who we have here is a director by the name of Michael Warren Powell. And Michael Warren Powell, he is known for, the episode that we're covering. And a couple other things, but not too much stuff. He did some other episodes of Monsters, Household Gods, and The Family Man, which we will eventually get to. Besides that,
So this guy was like a filler director when they couldn't get anyone else?
It seems like it, because they do have some really strong people in here. And I have mentioned before Robert Block from, Robert Block, I can't even say his name, fucking... The writer of the Psycho, I can't think of his name for some reason, but he wrote Psycho, the movie, the book, and he's doing the new Bates show. He's in this, so there's a lot of strong contributors, including Stephen King. Our writers here this time, we've got Bob Balaban and Kenneth Pressman. And Bob Balaban, you will know, he has a very iconic face that you have seen in other things. He's kind of all over the place in today's television. You'll know him from doing the Close Encounters of the Third Kind as David Logan there. Done a lot of acting throughout the years. He was in Moonrise Kingdom, Ghost World, the Grand Budapest Hotel. Who's the guy who does those types of movies? The Grand Budapest, Moonrise Kingdom, all that stuff. Not a horror dude, so I can't really think of his name. But this guy's all over the place. And he has done a lot of acting, a lot of writing, a lot of directing. Some of the stuff that he's directed includes the... Jesus, I don't even know where to start with this. Well, he's done some Tales from the Dark Side. He did Trick or Treat, which is the pilot for Tales from the Dark Side, the very first episode of that. And this show wouldn't have happened without Tales from the Dark Side. Also wrote some, or directed some Eerie Indiana episodes, which was a fun show from back when I was a kid in the 80s. The other writer is Kenneth Pressman. And Kenneth Pressman, he wrote Diary of a Hitman, a movie called Threesome in the 70s, which just looks like it's this this shitty pseudo-porn thing. And not too much more besides that. He's only maybe done like five things. Some of our actors here. We've got Soupy Sales as Howard Philby. And I'd like to say that Soupy Sales is basically Dustbrain. We've also got George Hall here as Pa, Bobo Lewis as the mother, and Stephanie Phillips as Lucy. Soupy Sales, he is a prolific actor that has been doing stuff for a very, very long time. You've definitely seen him all over the place. And with a name like Soupy Sales, I mean, you gotta be known here and there throughout the years. The other one to take note of is George Hall. And George Hall, he was in The Young Adventures of Indiana Jones as Old Indy. And
he just has been playing old guys for a long time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's always been old. So he's done a couple of things here and there throughout the years, but nothing too extravagant that I can really tell. He has credit as an elderly driver in the Big Daddy movie. So there you go. So let's dig into this. So this mess starts off with Soupy Sales playing as Howard Philby. He is a traveling salesman, and there is a hairpin turn that he does not successfully take. So he ends up going to the farmer's barn, which is lit up. And this barn is basically turned into the house for the farmer and his wife, who pretty much just sit there. The farmer whittles wood, and the wife, she knits. And Soupy Sales comes in. There's a storm. He sits down with them. He seems really bored by them. They're telling him some old stories from back when. And they're looking through photo albums. And the whole time he's kind of like, well, can you drive me here? I'd like to get to town. No, we don't have anything that drives. Can I use your phone? Nope, we don't have a phone. Well, do you have an umbrella so I can make a walk? Nope, we don't have an umbrella. And they're just like, well, why don't you just stay warm and keep listening to us talk about the good old days and look at our photo album. And he's about ready to go. But then they say, and this is our daughter. And the daughter is super hot. The picture of her instantly excites Soupy Sales. And he starts getting this big fucking shit-eating grin on his face, and he's nodding his head to everything they say. He's super interested. He's like, does she live here? They say, yes, she does. And he says, well, I would love to spend the night. And then and they say, oh, okay, well, we'll have to have you sleep on the floor here. And he's like, oh, well, there's no extra bed. And they say, nope, we just kind of sit here in our rocking chairs and sleep that way. The only other bed is up there with our daughter. And he's like, well, I mean, I could just sleep on the side of the bed and she won't even know I'm there. And he's smiling the whole time. And they're like, well, maybe, what do you think, Ma? I don't know. And then Soupy Sales says, well, you could even put up a modesty sheet. And then you won't have to worry at all. Because, you know, a sheet between two people sleeping in the same bed is going to stop a boner from happening, right?
Well, it might stop a boner from going in someone if they stay on their side of the sheet.
Yeah, well, I don't think Dustbrain would stay on his side of the sheet. And neither...
I don't think neither Dustbrain...
Neither is Soupy Sales here.
I don't think Dustbrain is stupid enough to fall for this.
Well, I don't know, because I have questions on my own fortitude here. He goes up there, and they tell him...
you're saying that this character, Soupy Sales, is you.
Well, I'm just saying that Soupy Sales is a smart guy, okay? That's all I'm saying. Yeah, he goes up there. They tell him to get his clothes off right quick because they don't want him to catch a cold, which is kind of strange because they kept him sitting down there for hours. Anyway, he does seem to have a cold coming on because he keeps sneezing. And he uses that as an excuse to try and get warm with Lucy, the daughter over there. While the modesty sheet is up, she is constantly rubbing on her legs and doing this whole routine where she's like stroking her breasts and making herself look all sexy in the shadows through the sheet. And Soupy is like, I'm really cold, I don't want to get sick, we should warm each other up by getting close to each other and creating some friction. And she's like, I don't really touch men unless I'm going to get married to them. And he's like, well, I love you, I just want to see you and touch you and love you and hug you. And she's like, well, maybe it won't be so bad if I let you take a look, and then you can decide if you want to marry me. And he does get a look. It takes a little bit of convincing, but she shows him. And she is very sexy. She's not a monster like I thought she was going to be. And, yeah, and he's like, yes, I will marry you. Now, can we start kissing? And, and like, I'm not exaggerating. Like, sometimes I will exaggerate just to kind of push the episode through. But this is like legit lines that he's saying. I will love you. I will marry you. I will kiss you and hug you forever. Yes, 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 yes. And she is like, okay, well, then you've got to listen to me. If we're going to be married, then you got to put your hands behind your back and hold them together, and then we can kiss. And he says, okay, I will do whatever you want. I love you, Lucy.
Kiss me and make an honest woman of me and then marry me.
Yes.
That's what I have written down.
Yes. So he does put his hands behind his back. They start kissing, and there is so much tongue here. Like, Soupy Sales, he is a man that's probably virgin on his late 50s, maybe early 60s.
So, she is at least 20 years younger than him.
But I was going to go like 30 years, but he is like licking her face, and he gets really into this, and the kissing scene here is intense. So he grabs her when he's getting real excited, and when he grabs her, his fingers kind of meld, they mush into her skin. She's got this like weird mashed potato skin, and she starts oozing blood and pus and guts.
Her skin just falls off wherever it touches her.
Yeah, it's just like oozing stuff and melting off, and she's like, "Oh, now look what you done." Well, he gets pretty freaked out by this, and she's like, well, you said you're going to marry me, so I guess you're just going to have to get used to this. You're not going to be able to touch me, so you're going to have to be real careful about this whole marriage thing. And at that point, he pulls a complete dust brain and says, I'm peacing out. So he starts getting his clothes back on, and he's getting ready to go. And he's like, I still love you. I'm just going to go and grab something from my car. I think I left a ring in there I can use for you. And she's like, the others were saying the same things.
Charlie
and the others, they all did the same thing. They all wanted to leave. He tries the trap door. It's not moving. He's locked up there in this high rise. And the parents are downstairs.
It's a barn.
And the parents are downstairs, and they're like, oh, now you done it. You won't get no married her. And their cadence is...
Oh, we're gonna have a marriage.
Yeah, their cadence is really weird, but they got this super thick accent that's hard to really calculate what they're saying. Anyway, they're laughing and yucking it up, the fact that she's caught another one, and he's trying to get away. The dad's like, I'm gonna fire her up, Lucy. You just get him in the right spot, because you know what's gonna happen again. And, so, you know, they're having a thing, a little bit of a back and forth, and she's like, you know, Jesus, I don't even know how to go on with this. Basically, he finds a room in this attic that has all kinds of stuff from traveling salesmen that have wrecked their cars on this hairpin turn, and there's tons and tons of stuff. There's the chattering teeth, there's like little toys, there's scarves, ties, baby booties. There's all sorts of stuff, and she's collected it all. Well, there's also an exit route. It's a pit. I don't know. It just falls down into where they bale the hay.
Thrashing machine.
Yeah, so they got a thrashing machine down there, and the old man, the Pa, is down there, and he's like waving down Soupy Sales. He's like, come on down, you know you wants it, come on, this is the way out. And it basically, if he takes that route out, he's gonna die. So he goes over to Lucy and says, Lucy, I love you, I want to marry you, I've changed my mind, this is all just an act to show how much I really care. Because, you know, without a little bit of cat and mouse, you can't appreciate a husband and wife, right? And once he gets her in his arms, he throws her into the thrasher. he turns around laughing, and then she's right behind him, but she's looking really ragged right now. She's full on rough zombie mode. And she's got this wavering voice to her that's like, I knew that you would do this. They all did this to me, and you're the same as them. And he's like, oh God, what do I do now? What do I do? And she's like, what you do is you love me and marry me and kiss me. And instead of doing that, instead of kissing her, he jumps into the Thrasher. Yeah. So this one basically ends with the parents sitting back down, whittling and knitting and laughing at their daughter who's upstairs singing. And then they hear another person crash on the hairpin turn. And we end it by seeing the parents look at each other and say, maybe this one will be better than the last. I did think that last guy could have been the one. I mean, he did sell some good merchandise, and I thought that he would be a man of his, what he sells, like something around those lines. Basically, he was a Bible salesman, which is just like a kick to the balls for the Christians watching this show. Because Soupy Sales, the Bible salesman, is apparently a bit of a pussy hound.
A horn dog.
Horn dog. So, what did you think Her about usual. The acting and the writing for this one?
I didn't like this episode either.
I think this one's the strongest out of the three that we watched, possibly. I think that the acting of Soupy Sales was fine. It was pretty goofy. The acting of the parents was also fine too. They were lazy and had this strange way of talking. And the sexy broad, well, yeah, she carried it through fine as well. It's just kind of straightforward and basic tale that's just sort of goofy. Don't think it's like complete garbage, but the monster itself is definitely strange. It's supposed to be, I think, like a vengeful spirit that needs to be purged from this land by marrying someone. So,
purged.
Yeah, so
I took it kind of like she's a siren call.
Eh.
She's like luring these men to their death.
It's maybe in a way she's luring them in, but she's also got unfulfilled stuff that she needs to have happen so her spirit can go on. She has
this beautiful singing voice as well.
Yeah.
But I didn't think about this while we were watching it because I just thought it was bad. But what did they do with all the crashed vehicles? If people kept crashing their vehicles there, like, what did they do with the vehicles?
Well, I assume that's how they make their living. They sell them.
They sell it for scrap?
Yeah. And it makes sense because neither of them have jobs, so.
Well, they're farmers.
Right. But they're that's not really, but they're not farming. Okay. They're retired. Okay. Is what they said.
They are living in the barn.
So, yeah. I'd say that this monster, I'd give it a 2, because it looks pretty goofy when it goes full-on zombie mode. But it's still kind of interesting to think of, like, the idea behind this daughter living in the attic that has to find someone to marry and love her. That, you know, and she's all creepified.
1.5.
Yeah. In other media, where you're going to find, farmer, I mean, I'm not even going to go the ghost story, but just farmers in horror. How about that? Movie that you like, Jason, Motel Hell. This is like one of your favorites.
Yeah, I like that one a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is basically about a farmer and his sister that they got a little bit of a Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing going on where they're eating people ups. But it's showing this young broad who's very sexy that falls in love with the farmer despite all of this really disturbing stuff going on. And it's just this really goofy horror movie that you can't help but love. Plus, farmer wears a big old pig mask while he comes at people. So, gotta love that.
It's still pretty disturbing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I was in a conversation earlier about what they're actually feeding the heads, and I think this was a conversation with you, Duskbrain. What they're feeding the heads, that they like bury these people up to their necks in the ground, and this is like part of the practice for getting them ready to be eaten ups. And I'm wondering what they're actually feeding them. Is it just like poop?
It's just supposed to be slop, you know? Slop. They would feed to pigs or whatever. Okay. You know?
Yeah,
it's
a very strange thing that's going on there, because to prep the meat, they gotta, like, make these people completely insane, apparently. So they feed them schlop, they hypnotize them, and like they do something to their vocal cords.
They cut the vocal cords so they like just
gurgle
and make noises like animals, so they don't think of them as humans anymore.
Why do you like the movie so much? Because it's very highly disturbing.
It is. It's really horrifying. But then it's contrasted with how, like, normal and, like, bumpkin kind of, like, these people are that are doing this. And then the weird thing with the woman marrying the old guy. He's old.
Yeah, yeah.
Old farmer. Doesn't make any sense. Mm-mm. And just the story starts going off the rails. It goes off in several different directions.
Yeah, because like, they also have this, like, really creepy guy that's a cop, I believe. And he's kind of a pervert, but he ends up being the hero.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know where they were going with it. That's probably why I liked it so much, because it was so confusing.
So definitely check that one out. Motel Hell, lots of fun. Yeah, would this one work as a movie?
Nah, I can't see it being expanded.
I think it could work as a movie if you're taking it straight up comedy and having all of these weirdos try and get with her. I think it could kind of work. Why not? You have like
Why
a
not?
Whole
because
yeah.
This
you have
is
like
not very
a
good.
Whole. You have a whole bus full of football. You started off with like basically this episode just to like kind of carry it through, and then you expand it by having a whole football team in a school bus crash there on the hairpin turn, and one by one the boys go upstairs to you know to deal with the woman up there, and they each go disappearing one by one. I think that could work.
Okay, if you say so.
You could even have a really weird sex scene where one of the football players is banging her in the ass while like her skin's just melting off in his hands.
I think that probably they would notice the thrasher running pretty often and blood splurting everywhere. So how would they get rid of the bodies? Just put him in that spare room and let him rot?
I don't think you need to explain too much if you go comedy.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen plenty that don't explain too much. So, yeah, not very scary. Is there a lesson here? Don't try to fuck the farmer's daughter is what I was going to go with. Don't fuck the farmer's daughter.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there's a bunch of things that they wanted to get across.
Yeah.
But not very
well. Don't
trust
Bible salesmen?
Yeah.
With your daughter?
Yep. Modesty sheets are not going to stop a man's heat.
If parents are like, oh yeah, you can sleep naked with our daughter, we'll just put a sheet up, something's probably wrong.
Yeah, definitely. Episode rating, I'm giving this one a 2. Don't think it's the worst, but yeah, it's not the best either. Moving on to the next one, we've got Jar. It's called Jar, and this one is airing on November 12th of 1989. This is episode 7 of season 2. Our director here is Bette Gordon. And are either of you familiar with Bette Gordon?
No.
Does that name jump out at you like Steven Spielberg?
Nope.
Yeah, that's a good reason why. She hasn't done too much, but she has done Desirable Alien Habitat and The Mother Instinct of the show Monsters. Mother's Instinct, I feel like, was a great episode. That was the one with the worms.
Oh, that one was pretty good.
So, yeah, she has a bit of a hit and miss here. Our writer is Stephen Davis, and Stephen Davis has only done this episode of Monsters, nothing else in his career. The other writer is Peg Haler, and Peg Haler has done a couple of things that we've already talked about. She's been on the show before on other episodes of Monsters. She's done Parents from Space, Rerun, Small Blessings, and The Young and the Headless, which we have yet to get to. So, yeah, she's done that stuff, and Johnny and the Sprites, apparently. our actors here, we've got Fritz Weaver as Mr. Hallett, Richard Edison as Jack Bateman, Gina Gershon as Anne, and Ed Covens as George Spiros. Fritz Weaver, he has done a couple of things. He's been in Creepshow as Dexter Stanley, The Marathon Man as Professor Beethestal. I can't really pronounce that very well, but Marathon Man's a fun one. Yeah, so we've also got Richard Edson, and Richard Edson, he's a dude that you'll have definitely seen here and there, always playing small roles all over the place. He's been in Good Morning Vietnam, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and a bunch of other stuff, but he's always just doing kind of small bits. Now, Gina Gershon, she is quite the sexy bird. One that I know her from the most is the movie Face Off, where she plays Sasha Hassler, which is essentially John Travolta's girlfriend that is abused by her, but once Nicolas Cage gets John Travolta's face, he's pretty nice to her, and that pays off later in the film. Plus, he gets a little bit of sexy with her, which is nice. So, yeah, Gina Gershon, sexy broad. The best thing about her is her Jack Nicholson mouth. She's got the exact same mouth as Jack Nicholson, and it really shows up if you put the Joker paint on her face and compare it to Jack Nicholson in the 80s Batman movie, because her mouth looks just like his.
You're full of shit.
Look at that mouth. No. That is the Joker's mouth.
Apparently she pulls it off a lot better than the Joker.
Well, and she does. Her lips lips are more feminine, and
it's not gross.
Well, what I'm trying to get across is
a normal person with a
what
smile.
I'm trying to get across is if you ever wanted to have sex with the Joker and not feel gay about it, just put some makeup on her and go at it. You'll be fine. No?
I think you're insane.
I think she's a gorgeous broad.
She has a big smile.
Yeah, I like her a lot.
That's what he's trying to
say. I would like to see her in more things. So, she's in here. That's fun. This episode has basically got Richard Edson as Jack Bateman, who is a PI, and he's doing a little bit of private investigation on a case that doesn't really matter. And he is pretty much at Mr. Hallett's establishment, played by Fritz Weaver. And his establishment is sort of like a bed and breakfast kind of thing, but no breakfast, just a bed and a lot of booze. And a bunch of jars. And these jars have this dark green liquid in them. So, yeah, he's talking to Mr. Hallett about stuff that doesn't really matter. Then he sees Gina Gershon come down. Her name's Anne. She's all sexy sex in black slinky slinks, high heels, nylons, the whole getup. High skirt, legs to heaven.
She dresses up for the swamp.
Yep, and she's coming down the stairs. She's looking to get something for her husband, who wants, I think alcohol is what he wanted.
Booze.
Yeah. So she's down there talking to Mr. Hallett about it. The whole time, Jack Bateman, the PI, he's eyeing her up and he wants some of that. The writing in here is pretty awful, but they're going for this kind of like Casablanca style. And it's just not coming across. So where they're trying to be all hip and swanky and razor sharp, it just feels kind of like you want to walk away and take a shit until the episode's over, because the dialogue is kind of painful. Anyway, the Jack Bateman hits on Anne, and they do a little bit of a flirtation thing. You find out that she's here with her husband, who's elderly. And you kind of get to know...
Well, he's not elderly, but he's a lot older than
she he's
is.
Older and he's not healthy, and you see why she's with the dude, because there is no other reason to be with a guy like that when you're looking like her, unless there's money involved. So, basically, what we got is her getting a big old jar and some booze and going back up to her room. So, yeah, there's a bit of a segue here where the old man comes down and talks with the PI, who has not left because he obviously wants to get in that woman's pants. And the old man talks with the PI, a lot of dialogue, like I said, makes you want to gouge your eyes out. Get into a three-way here where the three of them are talking, the wife, the husband, and then the PI. And yeah, it's a bunch of nonsense. Basically, what we're gonna find out here is what's in the jars as the wife opens up the jar for her husband after a little bit of pretend foreplay. And a squid pops out of it, lands on the husband's face, and sucks him into a puddle of nothing.
Yeah, she says, I know I haven't been the best wife in the world, and I'm sorry. You'll never have to mistrust me again.
Yeah, and then he goes to kiss her, and she's like, I don't know about that kiss. How about you open the jar and have some pickles?
Some of these fancy swamp pickles.
Yeah, fancy swamp pickles. So, yeah, he opens it up. That's what happens. And then we see... The dude who runs the establishment, he's collecting these things from the swamp and he's basically putting them into jars, and he does this on his off time. So he's doing that downstairs. The PI, he comes up and knocks on Gina's door and instantly starts accusing her of murder because he did not see the husband leave. Really jump into conclusions here. Dialogue hits up real quick to her admitting that she did kill the husband with a squid monster that came out of the jar. And then she says, that, you know, she wants to fuck him and he's super handsome, so they should fuck. And they do. And there's like a 2-minute scene of them fucking. And then we got the morning after where they're devising a plan on how she's not so smart, how she's going to spend all of this guy's money. She needs someone to help her manage it. So PI guy's going to help her manage it. They leave the place, but not before the owner gets a lot of money from the wife to pay for the jar, $300, which I think is lowballing it. The PI, he leaves with a jar too, and that's where your episode ends, the two of them leaving with jars, because you're supposed to be left with the idea that they're probably very mistrusting of each other and going to try to kill each other and get the monies for themselves. So.
I don't know how the PI could get her money, because it's basically hers.
Right. Doesn't make sense.
She can't get married to him.
Doesn't make sense. Nope. Can't get married
she
to him because
the dead guy, then the she idea. Money.
Yeah. The idea is she can't leave the husband because then she won't make money. But if he's just a missing person, then she's got at least X amount of time to spend all the monies.
7 years before they declare him dead.
Right. So, yeah, she's got 7 years. Good luck, hopefully, to spend all the monies. Bad episode. Not too hot on this one. Best thing about it is sexy Miss Gina.
Less than 5 minutes in, they made a fat joke.
Sure.
I wrote it down. People are going missing faster than donuts at a fat people's convention.
I like that. That's a good joke.
That wasn't a good joke. A fat people's convention.
So, as this monster goes, it's a tiny squid thing that pops out of a jar that you barely see. Gotta give this monster a 1 because you can't really even see it. And we don't really get to know too much about it. So, giving it a 1. Yeah.
I feel like all of these episodes were so bad that I'm having a hard time even...
Okay.
Them.
So
I'll give it a 1.
Sure. No problems. No arguments there. Would you change anything for this? I would definitely change something to it. I would change everything to it and just make it a whole episode of Gina strip teasing.
They could just replace the PI and the sexy lady with Lorelai and Rory Gilmore. And they are trying to figure out how to get rid of Lorelai's awful boyfriend.
Okay, this is a reference to what show?
Gilmore Girls.
Gilmore Girls, okay. So
that was
if
clear
this,
by Gilmore.
So if this would work as a movie, it would basically be an episode of Gilmore Girls with squid monsters from the swamp that suck people into nothing.
Yes.
Okay, sure. That could be a movie. I don't think this is scary. And the lesson here, I think, is... Don't marry, if you're rich and you're an old dude, don't marry a young hot broad unless you have, like, I mean.
Well, dude was thinking ahead. He didn't even write her into the will. Like, she had to kill him without having any evidence of him being dead.
Yeah, but this, the lesson here would be that you can't really marry him. So, like, just promise you'll marry them and get all the sex you want from them and then don't actually marry them.
Oh, are you talking about the PI?
No, I'm talking about the old man who married her.
Oh.
Like, well, Hugh Hefner. He shouldn't have married her. He should have just...
Of course he did get married.
Fucked her. Every so often. Gotten his rocks off and then found someone else to fuck and continue doing that until he's dead. Right? Oh, that's I feel like Dustbrain would be the expert on this, right? Is that what you do? You don't marry. You just fuck.
It's a little hard to do when you're...
When you're, like, super old?
Super old, yeah.
And, like, you have a reputation for never marrying anyone?
Well, then you find the ones that will fuck you, and then you give them some money to, like, go spend and whatnot. You don't put a fucking ring on their finger.
Oh, you buy a prostitute.
There you go. Why not? There's plenty of high-class, good-looking prostitutes out there.
All right.
So there, yeah.
Sure. The lesson of this one is to hire a prostitute.
Yes, I agree. That's the lesson. Prostitutes.
I mean, if you're paying for them, you know, you can just have them hang around.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, I mean, it's Pretty mm-hmm. Woman. It's Pretty Woman.
Yeah, if they want to marry you, it's not because of your good looks. It's not because you have to take 12 pills in the morning. No. It's what's in your wallet.
Well, you already take 3.
Yeah, I'm getting close. Episode rating, gonna give this one a 1.5.
I'll give it a 2 for effort.
The only reason it gets a 0.5, I would rather give it the lowest score possible of a 1.
So you think she's hot?
But yes, I think she's incredibly hot, and I like the dress that she is in. She's a sexy broad. So, she gets the 0.5 added. And, other media for swamp creatures, I guess you gotta go DC Comics Swamp Thing. There's some movies of Swamp Thing, has, I believe, Heather Locklear in them. I haven't seen them since I was a kid. Also, oh, wow. Cartoon series. Yep, also a cartoon series that I haven't seen since I was a kid. But the comics I read every so often, the comics by Alan Moore, there's some very scary stuff in those comics. Now, if you want some horror comics and you want top-notch, top-shelf horror comics, you got to go Alan Moore's Swamp Thing run. There's very little that's as scary as that stuff. Real creepy comics. Love them to death. Definitely check them out. If you're unfamiliar with the tale of Swamp Thing, better for you to go into them with that knowledge, because it's a perfect place to start and really get your rocks off on the origins of him. Wouldn't go back to the Len Wein comics of Swamp Thing, which happened before the Alan Moore run. They're a bit more hokey. Alan Moore stuff is real straight-up horror. So check that out.
Well, I have one for this one.
Okay.
It's not horror, necessarily.
Is it Squidbillies?
No. It's Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea, specifically Deadly Amphibians.
Okay.
It's not a swamp, obviously. They are
The Voyage to the Bottom the of the Sea, this was a television series?
It was a television series in the 1960s. It's very overacted and overdramatic, and it's wonderful in every way.
Okay.
But they usually battle some sort of monster in each episode.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's, like, caused by nuclear waste, or sometimes it's, like, body snatchers. I don't remember all the specifics,
okay. But this sounds like right up my alley.
A frog thing. Yes, I've been telling you we need to watch this for a while.
Okay.
So
it's a frog monster.
This one's a frog monster. But they battle a monster every time, so I guess it's sort of sci-fi horror.
That's cool.
Yeah. Okay. My dad was terrified of it as a kid.
Yeah.
When he was watching, and he would have been 10 years old or 11 years old, he was terrified of the monsters in this. It's a great show, though.
All right. So check that out. I'll have to check that out, too. And we're going to close out with the monsters intro to the show. And hopefully you'll join us tomorrow. And have a great Friday the 13th. Happy Friday the 13th. Jason, Christina, Cake Bitch, and Dustbrain, you guys have anything to say?
No.
Okay. No? All right. Well, let's find out. What's your favorite Friday the 13th movie, Dustbrain?
Oh, boy.
Mine is Part 5. The one, the one with Joey Brucia Burns getting chopped up for offering his candy bar to the dude chopping. That's my favorite one.
He just likes that scene.
I could watch it over and over.
Nah, I like four.
Four?
Yeah.
Four is a real good one too. Yeah. All right, Christina, you haven't been exposed to Friday the 13th, have you?
Well, I watched that scene where the kid gets chopped up. Doesn't really.
So then that has to be your favorite since it's the only one you've seen.
No, I don't think any of them.
It would make sense that that's the one that you've seen because that's the one that I probably play the most of in here.
Yeah, I don't know. They don't.
There's also a cocktail for that on cakewolf.com you can check out.
I'm not really into slashers, so.
All right, so yeah, we're going to peace out and you guys have a great Friday the 13th.
There must be something on. Oh, wow! Candy critters!
Oh!
Oh, great! It's Monsters, our favorite show.
Shh. It's Star.